My name is Beverly Robertson.
No, that's good.
I'm the National Director of the Pregnancy and Newborn Health Education Center at the March of Dimes. So I have been working with bloggers through our campaigns for a long time, and I'm super excited to have this panel with me today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we're just going to sort of get going. I encourage questions, so if you have one, please, you know, blurt it out, because I always forget my question at the end. So you are at BlogOut. I love our hashtag. So please, if you're tweeting out, please use #BlogOut. So this is about raising awareness through blogger outreach. So I just wanted to, from where we are sitting, these are some of the participant traits that I think are for bloggers that we use. So, and for those that are bloggers, and you're blogging for a cause, so what would that look like for you? So these bloggers are going to be incredibly passionate about your cause, whatever your cause is. So it could be children, it could be the environment, it could be cancer, it could be birds or animals or whatever your cause is. So generally these are the traits that we're looking at. Passionate, highly engaged, making a difference, doing good. You know, we're all how many people have been to a session where they're using some of the do-good kind of language here? This is awesome.
A lot.
Awesome. I just love that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about this hope over tragedy. So I'd like to introduce the number six mommy blogger in the U.S., Catherine Stone.
Good morning. I'm so glad you guys are here. Thank you for being here. I know it's tough on the last day, so we're really grateful that you're all here. Yes, please. Thank you. My blog is Postpartum Progress, postpartumprogress.com. My Twitter handle is at postpartum PROGR, which is dumb. I know. Don't ask. I kind of had no idea what I was doing when I first started Twitter. I write the most widely read blog in the world on postpartum depression and all mental illnesses related to pregnancy and childbirth. I also am a parenting writer for Babbel.com, and I also do a lot of consulting and support of other issues around maternal health. So I work with the Million Moms Challenge, which is not the other million moms that everyone hates, but the nice million moms who care about people's health. Different group. I've been blogging since 2004, so I feel sort of like an elder in the world of blogging. Just a quick explanation, I actually had postpartum depression when my first child was born in 2001, and it was a complete shock and horrible. It was the most devastating experience of my life, and so that's why I, years later when I recovered, decided that I would start my blog. And actually last year, I started a nonprofit. So I sort of am living in both worlds, the blogging world, which I know pretty well now, social media, and the nonprofit world, which is a steep learning curve for me, but I'm excited about the opportunity to create even more change. So enough about me. I wanted to quickly talk about why I forgot to move the slide. I'm sorry. Yeah, I can't. I'm not good at multitasking. Why it's important, I think, for causes to use bloggers, and why we have actually a lot of influence, a lot more, I think, than people realize. The first is our ability to influence policy. I was actually involved in helping the Melanie Blocker-Stokes Mothers Act pass. It was passed as part of the Affordable Health Care Act, and it's to help support funds for research around postpartum depression. And one of the things that I've learned in working with government policy legislators is they like working with people who have platforms. If you have a platform, if you have the eyeballs, if you have the followers on Twitter, that moves them. They pay attention. So the first reason for causes to use bloggers is because they have platforms, and legislators are influenced by that. The other reason is actually there's a lot of research now showing that bloggers are actually extremely influential. And I was just going to give you one example. There was a study done by Ketchum and BlogHer that found that twice as many women are influenced to consider products and other issues promoted by a blogger than by a celebrity. So a lot of organizations and causes, whether it's, you know, consumer companies or nonprofits are now sort of moving away from this idea of using celebrities and spending gobs of money on that, and they're working with bloggers and having the same or more influence and impact. And that's why it's worth working with social media. So those are the reasons I wanted to share as to why I really think it's important. In terms of, okay, so if you believe what I'm saying and decide, okay, I want to work with bloggers, or if you're a blogger that's trying to convince people to work with you, you know, what I tell organizations and nonprofits is you have to read. I mean, to identify the people that you want to align with and work with, read. I mean, it's really simple. There's not a magic list somewhere. Don't believe lists because they're usually wrong and old. You have to pay attention. You have to do the Google alerts. You have to do the Twitter searches. You have to do all the things that are necessary to really pay attention to whatever the issue is. I do it with postpartum depression. I have searches for postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, antenatal depression, baby blues, post-adoption depression. I mean, I pay attention to everything that every single person is saying around the issues that are important to me, because that allows me to reach out to these people and create, partnerships and collaborations. So it's a pain in the butt, I know, because all of us have even less time than we ever had before to read, but that's how to find the people. And in terms of, I think, what drives participation in bloggers with causes, there's really two reasons. If somebody reaches out to me and asks me to do something that I'm personally connected to, and we've created a relationship together, then I'm going to do it. Because I care about that person, or I care about that cause because I've been through it myself. So if I have a personal connection, like anybody that asks me to do something, and I'm probably going to get myself in trouble here by saying this in front of all these people, but if you ask me to do something related to maternal health, I'm doing it because that's what I do and it's what I care about. The other thing is making personal connections. And I think as bloggers and others, we have a tendency, or at least I know I did for many years, to sort of hide behind my laptop. You know, it's very easy for me to type all day long and not go out there in the world. And that's a massive mistake. I can't rely in terms of the work that I do, whether it's my own blogging and trying to get, you know, more paid work around writing and consulting, or whether it's trying to get more people to pay attention to postpartum depression. When things really took off for me was when I started going out, going to conferences, going to events, and meeting people in person. And then I've sort of followed your blog. I know who you are. But now it's different. We know each other. And when I send them that email, they actually read the email. And so I hope these don't sound like you're like, well, this is really basic. You know, this is not, you know, advanced blogging 342. But it really is that simple. It's not that complicated. Pay attention, understand who the people are, and go and see them. In terms of, I just wanted to give a few really quick examples of things that I've done, all of which have been free. Like, I have spent $0 and 0 cents. And as a fledgling nonprofit, for me, that's very important. One of the things that I did was create the Mother's Day Rally for Moms Mental Health. And what this is on Mother's Day, for 24 hours straight, so Mother's Day is always pretty tough for me, and I do have two kids, I post a letter from an author or a well-known blogger who's been through postpartum depression. And they all write letters to new moms. So each letter is about the importance of a mother's emotional health. And I've had pretty much, you wouldn't believe how many people have had postpartum depression. It's actually extremely common. And I would say if you looked at any list of the top bloggers around the country, they've all participated in the Mother's Day Rally for Moms Mental Health. And it's a simple way of me bringing stories in, and then I have 24 people who have their own platforms who are now talking about my issue and my blog on that day because they want people to read their story. And it becomes this sort of spidering out effect that's amazing. And I don't spend a cent. So it's going out and grabbing these people and bringing them into you and supporting them. And you sort of create this symbiotic relationship that now they all refer everybody they know to my blog, and they're like free advertising, and it's amazing. It's an amazing thing. So that's just one, really easy example. Another is last year, last fall, for the very first time, I tried to raise money, which I've never done before. And everyone was like, come on, Catherine, get over it, just do it. And I was nearly hysterical. I mean, I was literally in my kitchen crying with my husband. I can't do it. I can't. But I finally said, okay, you know what? It's time. We got to get going. So I decided I would create something called Strong Start Day, and that would be my first ever like try at asking people for money. And Strong Start Day is on October 5th because October 5th is actually the most common birthday. More children are born on any other day than any other day than October 5th, or on October 5th than any other day, excuse me. And just by giving it a hook and a little teeny tiny logo, people wrote about it nonstop. It was amazing. There was tons of bloggers. All the top mom bloggers wrote about it. And $10,000, which may not seem like a lot to a lot of, you know, massive organizations, but I'm talking about just through Twitter and my friends, we raised $10,000. And again, it was totally free. Debbie actually, who's my dear friend, got the logo for me. I mean, people are willing to help. People are willing to do things because they really believe in a cause. So those are some like basic ways that I have tried to create relationships that bring people in and involve people in my cause. And then lastly, and I hope I'm not going over because I know I only have 10 minutes, but I really wanted to share a few mistakes that nonprofits and brands, if you're from a brand company, make, or PR firms make. These are some things that I see happening all the time with women bloggers who I obviously know more of as a quote-unquote mommy blogger. The first is random contact. Just please do yourself a favor and don't make random contacts with people. The emails that we get that say, "Dear blogger," or "Dear Susan," I've never been Susan. I don't know who Susan is. Why are you emailing Dear Susan? There's this one lady who consistently calls me Susan, and I keep telling her I'm Catherine. And don't reach out to someone unless you've done the homework to find out who they are and what they do. The other thing is, when you understand what they do, don't focus only on their blog. Right, I write a blog about postpartum depression, but I'm also a parenting writer. I also work with a lot of, the UN Foundation and maternal health causes. I'm a personality. I'm a whole person, not just a post. So you make the mistake, if you're only looking at their blog and not looking at their wider platform, of not recognizing and identifying people that might be really great to partner with. Another problem is treating social media as periphery. I know a lot of organizations that just have an intern to talk to bloggers. No offense to any interns that are in the room. I love you all. I've been an intern myself. But it's usually it's the secondary, tertiary, quadrupleary, it's the last thing on the list of things that people are paying attention to. And you need to think about it as part of your initial strategy and have people working on your blogger outreach that know what they're doing. Third is one-way relationships. You want everybody to do everything for you, and you never do anything for them. And bloggers tire of that quickly. If they care about a cause, they'll get involved with it really initially, but if you never support them, invite them, thank them, they're going to drift away. And then finally, the mistake that I think a lot of people make is misunderstanding metrics. People want to, people are trying to figure out, they rely on numbers to try to figure out who to work with. And the fact of the matter is people can buy Twitter followers, which is horrifying, but it's true, and they do. Alexa and Compete are usually wrong. If you want to know what my stats are, email me, and if you're legitimate, I'll send you a screenshot of Google Analytics, which is right. There are people who have a lot of numbers who don't engage with people or have really much influence at all. And so you need to know those things. And again, that takes me back to doing your homework and getting to know the whole person and really looking at how people are engaging before you decide who to work with. And that's it.
Debbie? Great. I'm Debbie Bookstaber, and I know all of these ladies here through my involvement with something I founded called Blogganthropy. So just as background, my whole career has been in online marketing. And back in 2006, I founded a blog called Mamanista.com. This is back before kind of mom blogs were cool. And I saw it really take off. And companies and brands suddenly started engaging with blogs. I mean, everything from free Disney cruises to washers and dryers to free kitchens. I mean, entire kitchens. I mean, it was crazy. But yet, when I would actually go to the blogging conferences, the people that I found most interesting were people like Catherine and Christine. And they're not the ones that the brands are sending free stuff to. They can't monetize their blogs easily. And these are all buzzwords kind of in the blogging community. Any blog conference you go to, I mean, half the panels are about how to monetize your blog, how to make this into a business, how to get a book deal. And these were people who were really working hard just for the purpose of serving a cause. And so I wanted to recognize them, and I knew I had a lot of contacts in the corporate world. Back when I was at Expedia, I'd worked on some of their social good efforts. And so I started Bloganthropy, bootstrapped it. I mean, it was entirely funded by me. I mean, its goal is never to make money, and its entire goal was just to recognize bloggers that use their platforms to do something good and unique. And we got enormous, we formed a board of some of the top bloggers in the country, and we didn't want to have it be a popularity contest. Because if you're a cause blogger, you are not out there to promote yourself. These people will not, you know, beg their friends for votes. You know, they don't want to do that. And we asked for nominations. You could either nominate yourself for the Bloganthropy Award or nominate a friend. And the quality of the women's, it was mostly women, not because we're sexist, but just that happened to be those who chose to engage. The quality of those nominations were just tremendous. And so Catherine was actually our first annual Bloganthropy Award winner. Christine was one of the finalists that year. We only recognized 5 people in the nation, and their impact, and I'd be happy to share any of the stories of what they've done, was just tremendous. I mean, huge, you know, getting legislation passed, having hundreds of thousands of people engage with them. You know, both of these ladies got laws passed. And so if you can have a cause and get a law passed, I mean, it shows you some of the power of these bloggers. And last year's winner was Susan Niebuhr from the blog called Toddler Planet. And she was on Twitter as @WhyMommy. Many of you might have seen WhyMommy trending on Twitter. And that was when she unfortunately passed away after, I believe it was her 5th or 6th battle with inflammatory breast cancer. And she had done more than just about anyone else other than the hugest nonprofits to raise awareness of inflammatory breast cancer, and had a tremendous impact in the blogging community in the world. And it was something nice to be able to have them be recognized by their peers in a larger forum, supported by national press releases, social media, and to receive that big, huge, giant check. So Procter & Gamble came in and gave us the big, huge, giant check, and all the bloggers, when they get it, kind of laugh about it like it's a big, huge, giant check, like I'm on a game show. But on some level, it means something. And, you know, some of Susan's friends told me that, yeah, she laughed about the big, huge, giant check, but on some level, it had really deep meaning to get that, to be recognized for her work. And especially when the cause bloggers don't get the free stuff, and they don't get the recognition, and they don't get the money. This was one form of trying to do that. And so that was my goal with that. I also work with brands. I mean, my real job that I actually get paid for is to do social media and online marketing for brands. So I see one of my clients in the audience. Hi, Udi's gluten-free. but, you know, some of the ways that you can identify bloggers to work with your nonprofit are similar to how you would identify them to work with a brand, with the biggest difference being that, obviously, nonprofits tend not to have free stuff to give anyone. They tend not to be able to run contests or ever pay for advertising. So really, one thing I always tell people is your actions should really be aligned with your goals. Is it simply brand awareness, or do you actually want there to be an action from this blogger post? And there's really different types of bloggers we reach out to based on that. So if my goal is simply for a nonprofit brand awareness, well then yeah, I'll prioritize reach. I'll look for their UVs. And most of the times bloggers will, as Catherine said, send you their actual real stats. I'll look at their Twitter followers, or look at their fans. I'll look at the level of engagement. I'll check for them in tools, you know, social media monitoring tools if I have access to it. If it's a brand that has a big budget or a nonprofit that has a big budget, maybe you're using a Radian 6 or a Sysomos or something like that. If it's a smaller one, I'm just using Google Alerts or free Twitter search tools or something like Sprout Social. Or there's lots of other platforms. I mean, I'll actually be monitoring for who's really talking about certain things. Then you make a specific ask of the blogger. Don't just say, I have this great cause and I'd love for you to be involved, because they're busy. I mean, on my blog, I get hundreds of emails a day, and I'm not even the number 6 mom blogger in America like Catherine. I mean, I still get hundreds of emails. And if people don't tell me specifically what they want, I'm sorry. You know, I have kids. I have a job. I can't really help them, and offer an easy toolkit. If it's just brand awareness and you really want to let people know about a specific event, a specific thing, make it easy. Don't make me have to search for, you know, the banner or something like that because I need image to go with my post. I mean, make it simple and do it. But if you really want fundraising or an action, then you need to get more involved with that blogger. And so at that point, motivated, engaged readers are the most important. So you might see a blogger like Christine where, you know, she won't have hundreds of thousands of readers. But I'll tell you, every time she comments on something on Facebook, there's like 100 people, you know, who within 5 minutes of it are responding to her. So her community is so engaged. They're the type that will make the calls to the legislators, write the letters, call the newspapers, call that. So if I actually wanted an action, I would look for the bloggers out there like Christine or people like that who are passionate about a specific cause. So they want to go beyond a banner ad or a simple post. They might really have an integrated campaign that they'd work on with you. And you have to also empower them to be unique. So I'm going to give a couple examples of how some nonprofits have empowered the bloggers to be unique. Because they don't just want to, you know, for engagement, they don't want to just say, take this pledge. I mean, that's the brand awareness. That's not the true engagement. That's not going to get you the money or people calling legislators. So, you know, there's a lot of slacktivists out there. And that's not a bad thing. If your goal is just awareness, you know, that's great. You know, just then you can just ask somebody to send a tweet for a particular campaign. And that can work if you have a brand sponsor that's willing to give you money for every tweet that you get or every Facebook like that you get. I mean, in that case, just you want to have a wide reach and make it simple and, like, you know, that's great, especially if you can get a sponsor to do it. But if you really want them to get involved, you need to kind of do a little bit more with that. So as a case study, here's Blogantherpy. You can actually see Catherine in that photo handing the big giant check to
Susan. The big check, man. It's so cool to get a big check.
It's like the Reader's Digest.
It's awesome.
And so, you know, in this case, I actually worked with P&G has a nonprofit side called Give Education. And we went to them with a very specific ask because, you know, I needed money to do this. None for me, but just enough to give somebody a big giant check. And I explained to them, you know, what is the value of working with the bloggers? You know, what kind of reach can you get? And it was just one part of their nonprofit campaign. But overall, you know, they supported Blogantherpy. They did a lot of other things, and they really reached out to bloggers as well as the traditional media. And overall, they had over 800 million traditional and social media impressions. That was not all attributed to Blogantherpy, but we were, you know, a good part of that. And some of the elements of the partnership was, obviously, they sponsored the awards. They provided the big, giant check. They came in person to the event that we had to give out the award. They sent their representatives. They had them there. And it was really with the goal of building relationships and talking. They had a blogger event where they knew that bloggers like content. So they brought in John Legend, super cool, you know, awesome, amazing performer. And, you know, he gave a concert, and that was with the traditional media as well. And then they had a separate little breakout session just for the bloggers that we invited to this event. So I helped them invite the bloggers to this event. So I picked about 20 of some of the most influential bloggers that could get to New York under their own money. Because, I mean, there wasn't enough money to pay for them to fly in. I mean, this was not going to be a huge thing. And we got to have, you know, an hour alone in a room with John Legend to ask him questions. And he was a celebrity spokesperson, but he's actually really, really smart and knows his stuff. So the bloggers got to have an interesting conversation with him, not about his record or anything like that, but specifically about the state of education in America. And you can bet that every one of them was tweeting the heck out of that, Facebooking out of it, writing posts, and talking about P&G Give Education, but in a way that they got involved. Some of the bloggers at that later went on to really do more extended campaigns. So it did have a trickle effect as well. And, you know, that's kind of an incentive for bloggers. Incentive for bloggers, you know, can be nice. So through that partnership, a blogger got to have access and meet John Legend. And that has some value. I mean, they weren't paying them, but it had some value. The other thing that we had in this sponsorship is we let them send a newsletter to the Blogantherpy list. So we have about 1,000 bloggers on that list who are highly influential, who have said that they are willing to receive the occasional, not like weekly, not even monthly, occasional, maybe it's like four times a year, newsletter that's specifically about a social cause. And they actually made it easy for me. They knew that, you know, I don't have a fund, and they actually put the newsletter together right in the HTML. They gave me the HTML. I just popped it right into my MailChimp free software, you know, free email program. Wasn't even using anything as fancy as Constant Contact, and sent it out. And it had a great click-through rate and was successful for them. But they made it easy for me. And I thought that that's an example of a company that has a nonprofit that does it right. donors choose. This is just an example of how to reach out to bloggers and what works and what doesn't. Donors Choose works with bloggers to raise funding campaigns. And this is an example of how reach is not necessarily as important as engagement. So they worked in 2008 with BlogHer, which is the hugest, most wonderful network of, women bloggers out there. I mean, big reach, right? But, it was just kind of posted up there. It was like a challenge to bloggers to donate money. And so they raised under $10,000. There's a blog called Tomato Nation. And they, of course, don't have the reach of BlogHer. I mean, nobody has, very few people have the reach of BlogHer. But they raised over $100,000 that year. So in 5 years, they've raised nearly $700,000 for Donors Choose. So what made them successful? They engaged. I mean, Donors Choose was willing to get a little wacky with Tomato Nation. I mean, the guy in 2006 said he'd shave his head if people met his goal. Later he danced in Rockefeller Plaza, danced as a tomato. Then he toured Washington, D.C., dressed as a tomato. And he played blackjack in Atlantic City, dressed as a tomato. I mean, he did funny things that his readers wanted to see him make kind of a fool of himself. And so they would donate money. I mean, people will donate money for something that they think is fun and engaging. And so he raised, so much more money. And so what you want is the blogger that will work with you on an idea like that, and you have to be open to having that two-way communication, and it can be successful. And obviously that was a fit for Donors Choose. He raised great awareness, and I mean, that's a pretty significant amount of money to come from one blogger outreach. Share Our Strength. This is actually a campaign that I am actually working on with them. And it's an example of how as nonprofits grow, sometimes they have to change their tactics. So Share Our Strength has always reached out to bloggers. They have something called the Great American Bake Sale. It's one of their big fundraisers every year. And they have big brands that are sponsor this. And they, reached out to bloggers about it. And, they were willing to have those conversations. So in 2010, Gabi of the blog What's Gabi Cooking said, "Hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a food blogger bake sale?" And Share Our Strength, supported her in that. They gave her some of the tools for it. They were really enthusiastic. They promoted it on their site, promoted it on their Twitter, their press releases, their Facebook page. And they tried to do some recognition of the bloggers involved. And it was successful. So in 2011, they raised $25,000 through 26 bake sales. Now, for, a nonprofit like Share Our Strength, that's not a ton of money, but remember the purpose of all those media impressions, because they were on 26 of the biggest food blogs in America. So it's tremendous awareness, and it was really effective from a brand awareness perspective, as well as, then it did raise some money. But as it evolves, so she's done it for 2 years now. It gets a lot for the blogger, because remember, these bloggers have jobs a lot of times, or they have a business to run. And so, she proactively said, "Look, I love this. I love this charity, but I cannot run this forever in terms of every detail, in terms of expanding it, in terms of pitching people. Can you give me some help?" And they were smart enough as a charity to know, okay, there comes a time when you have to put some of, additional resources behind it. So they sent out an RFP to find somebody to help on their blogger awareness, to assist on the, on just in general their blogger outreach, but also specifically for the bake sale. So I will be working with them on that campaign this year. And so kudos to them for picking me in the RFP process. But really, I mean, they're doubling their goal. So their goal this year is to raise $50,000, but then also to get, many more bloggers, double the bloggers, double the stuff. Oh, sorry. I see that.
Well, that's a lead-in, because I work for Nationwide Children's Hospital. We're opening a new hospital in June. How much lead time do you
like? I think we're podcasting. You want them?
Yeah, I'm going to do this real quick.
Thank you. Hi, I work for Nationwide Children's Hospital, and we're opening a new hospital in June, and I think, having families involved is a very important strategy. And how much lead time do you need for that RFP to build the relationship so it's genuine? I mean, I'm feeling under pressure. It's March.
Well, I mean, already. Bloggers are fast. So if you know how to do it, I mean, you can turn around those impressions quickly. I mean, and, in this case, they are answerable to their board, so they needed to make sure that they went through a certain process to bring that person in, make sure that they got the lowest, it's bigger. If you were a depending on your goals, I mean, you can find somebody to do this, and it doesn't take that much time to find them. And then they can generally turn it around pretty quickly. It depends on how much advanced planning is needed. So in this case, you know, they have to, the bake sale this year is April 28th. They have to get people signed up in advance. So that way they can start publicizing it on their site for a few weeks ahead of time and really be prepared to do it. So it's different than an event, or you just want somebody to do, like, Catherine did Start Strong Day, and I mean, you pulled that together at the end of September and managed to get that, you know, October 5th. So, I mean, that was an example of doing one that's fast. To build the relationships can take a while, and there's really no shortcuts unless you sometimes work with somebody who has some pre-existing relationships. So in my case, you know, I know lots of food bloggers. So going out to them to get them involved in this, you know, they're willing to at least answer my emails. My emails don't go into, like, the spam filter or, like, their general, like, I get a couple hundred things. And they also, you know, you're honest with them. You tell them exactly what you want, and you provide the resources necessary for their success. And you're willing to listen back to them. I mean, you can't say, do this and do it the way I want it. They're not going to do it, unless maybe you pay them. I mean, if you want somebody to do something exactly the way that you want it, you really do have to pay them or have them be engaged. I mean, and, you know, so far, all the charities I've worked with have been able to do it without paying them because they are willing to have that two-way relationship. So having the organizational help, having the support of the sponsors, and then having all the toolkits. And so I think that was my last slide. Woohoo!
Christine.
All right. Good morning. I'm Christine, and unlike everybody else on this panel, I've only been at this since late 2009. I became pregnant in the spring of 2009 and started a little mommy blog because I had no clue what I was doing. I'd never changed a diaper before. So you can see the ugly little header, and I think I posted like four times on this little blog. Went through my entire pregnancy, gave birth, and I didn't know my daughter was born with a heart problem. She was born with a broken heart, and she died suddenly at home in my arms out of nowhere. In 2009, so I was thrown into this world. And overnight, I had never heard the term for that. It's congenital heart disease. I had never heard that phrase. Turns out it's the number one birth defect, but I'd never even heard of it. But within a month, I was the number one congenital heart disease blogger. So it was a fast learning curve. I just wanted to talk a little bit from the blogger side to the bloggers in the room about why I think I had so much success. My baby died, and yes, online, that gets a lot of attention, to be frank. On Twitter, people were so supportive. It was really nice. And, of course, I didn't tweet right away. It was a little while, but I found a lot of support in that. But it wasn't just that my baby died. I changed when she passed away, and I became fearless with my writing. I write, and I cry when I write. People cry when they read it. I let my emotions show for my cause, and I think that that's really important, and I think that that will get you far. I let my passion show. I mean, I'm about to cry now, so. So I have both perspectives because I also started a tiny nonprofit in her name, and I have several grassroots advocacy groups. As Debbie mentioned, I got legislation passed to screen babies for the heart defect that my daughter suddenly died of, and I did a lot of that through blogging and social media, so that's a whole another panel, but it was really interesting. So from the blogger side, trying to raise awareness and get other blogs involved with that, I used really some of the basics that I stumbled upon. I do have a background in journalism, so I kind of had a heads up and could hit the ground running with this. And guest posting, of course, is really like a building block of blogger outreach, identifying guest posters. And I'm going to talk about this a little more in depth, and the other two I don't talk about in depth, but blogging link-ups, which I know Beverly has used a lot with the March of Dimes, getting bloggers to write on their blog about your cause and linking them all up so people can read the different stories. And then building in some blog lean. If people really like a cause and you make a cute little graphic, they'll put it on there and they'll say, I support, you know, I have heart and I love kids with broken hearts or whatever your cause is. And I mean, that's not a huge amount of awareness. It's kind of just awareness for the sake of awareness, but it can get people in. It can bring them in and they can read your story and then they can be compelled to act. So my experience using guest posting to further my cause, these are some of the parenting blogs that I've been on because of course parenting is my main issue, because I want to reach out to other parents to help them to make sure that this doesn't happen to their children. And I've been on all of these parenting blogs, and if you're in that world, you'll recognize probably all of them. And I just wanted to point out and talk about this because I don't think that, well, there was one that I blind pitched. All of these I had built relationships with, and you've heard us talk about that. You've probably heard that phrase a million times this week, but it's so important. And just over Twitter, just reaching out, talking to the writers of these blogs, and some of them, two of them at least, approached me to guest post out of nowhere. I didn't even have to do any of the work. And there was one that I blindly pitched, but I wanted to point out that the only reason, when she told me after the piece ran, that it was actually because her twins were born the day before my daughter was born. So there was the personal connection there. So there's always a personal connection, I think, to get people involved and to get them to care. And I was really specific about the types of blogs I wanted to approach. And I didn't just blog just to tell Cora's story, to say, hey, make you aware and make you really sad about what happened to my daughter. I ended up with a call to action. I set up this campaign around the newborn heart screening, and I encouraged parents to ask for the screening because it's simple, or I encouraged them to write their legislators and learn more about it and to stand up for babies and broken hearts. So I think that was really important. Once I got there, to be really effective with the space. All right, so I just kind of told you about some of the basics, but I know I went really quickly over two of them, so if anybody has more questions about those two, I can talk about those later too. But I wanted to talk to you about some of the new kind of shiny objects that are out there that might be a little bit worth your time. As I got kind of more known in the baby and the maternal and newborn health world, I've been approached by some nonprofits to work for them, or I've approached them in this instance that I'm going to talk about. This was not really an organization. It's a government-funded website that serves as the newborn screening clearinghouse. It's called Baby's First Test. And it's run by a nonprofit, but it's just this built-out website with everything about newborn screening. And they won a grant to promote the site. So I approached them with this idea to use bloggers to promote the site. And I thought about how to do that, and I realized that, why don't we pay bloggers? Because bloggers, we all like to get paid. And in the corporate world, they've been doing that forever. And I realize a lot of you as nonprofit world are sitting back and saying, okay, well, we don't have any money to pay bloggers. So I think, you know, you're going to have to win a grant, or really it's going to take some convincing to get get approval to do that. So we're in the middle of that program. We're going to pay the bloggers, and then we're going to have a presence at Blog Her this year too. The other shiny object that I've had that I think holds some promise with blogging is Pinterest, of course, which is being talked about all the time right now, and kind of debated about, you know, its long-term utility. But we did find a way to use it, and I can't take all the credit. This was started by two bloggers in the heart defect community. They pinned pictures of our children, the children with CHD. And honestly, when they told me about the idea and told me what they were doing, I thought, okay, well, who wants to, frankly, repin pictures of children that are ill? On Pinterest. If you're familiar with Pinterest, it's a lot of crafting and just pretty things. And, I mean, as beautiful as most of the children, well, all of the children are, I just didn't think that sounded appealing. So I was really surprised, and I wanted to share with you today the success that they had. And the reason that it's relevant here is because these all link to people's blogs. So you click through and you can read more about these children. And the board has over 1,000 followers. And my daughter's picture, you can't see it on there, but it's linked on the Pinterest board. And it got repinned over 200 times, which I think is pretty impressive. And not only did it just get repinned, but it drove a lot of traffic to my blog. And I did see an increase in the amount of people liking the Facebook page, following. So I think it did get new readers. It was definitely touching on the surface of things, and I hope that these people will become engaged longer, but it was kind of a cool project just to see where it goes. And I kind of wanted to talk about why I thought some of you might be interested in why my daughter's pen got repinned so much, because I actually didn't use my network to advertise it until I saw that it was getting repinned like crazy. So it was just naturally getting repinned, and I think it was because it was the professional picture that was taken, and it got repinned into a lot of photography boards. So it got repinned, so it was really great because it got repinned outside of the people, just outside of the CHD people. Because in that community, some of the some of the people in the heart defect community have this tendency to try to raise awareness on their blogs with each other. Like during Awareness Week, they all guest posted on each other's blog about CHD, and I've done a lot of time trying to coach them, like, okay, we're all well aware of heart defects. Like, let's move on. And so I thought that that's what would kind of happen with this board. It would get repinned onto a million heart boards, but it didn't. It was just really exciting to see how well it did. It got repinned, because she was so cute, too. It got just repinned into boards like cute and baby, which made me a really proud mama. So we had a lot of success with that. And I think we will wrap it up, and I'll hand it to Beverly, and then we'll take a lot of questions.
I'd like to just talk. You know, I'm one of those people who has to stand. I'm sorry. I am not really a sitter kind of girl. So I wanted to bring the perspective. I just want to say, first of all, that I've met these ladies on Twitter. I have a longstanding relationship with Christine and Catherine, and I'm loving what Debbie's been doing. So I met them on Twitter, and you could meet them on Twitter too. So yes, it's about building that relationship over time and talking to people. You know, people tweet out their life story on Twitter, and I'm always like, hey, thanks, welcome, whatever. I'm a chatterbox, so Twitter really works for me. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about how the March of Dimes is using bloggers and what we've done and what they've done and how they've helped us. So this is how we engage them. We engage them sort of everywhere, on every platform. Everything that we do is integrated and cross-posted. So if we have a blog post, we're going to post that on Twitter. We're going to post it on Facebook. I'm going to pin it, assuming that we... Now, pinning everything. So yeah. the crust of pinning is that you must have an image or a video.
Yeah.
So, frankly, we need to think about, you know, we're all going to have to think about our websites to make sure that we incorporate that component that's going to allow us to expand into this network. So, and this is something, so now, and whenever I write a blog post, I got to go find a picture to put on. It could be a graphic, an image, a chart, like whatever it is. We do, when we use our... we do a couple of things with emails, newsletters. As you can imagine, we have a huge newsletter list, so we do push out like 400,000 people on our newsletters, traditional newsletters. But I put little posts about, hey, we're over here. We're on Pinterest now. I do go to Blog Her. Love it. Type A Mom, another conference. Blog World Expo. You know, so we do go to try to identify the bloggers and have that FaceTime with what we're doing. So we developed a blogging campaign. It was called Fight for Preemies. So does anybody know what the mission of the March of Dimes is? What is the mission of the March of Dimes? She's drinking water. It's birth defects, premature birth, and infant mortality. So we're all about babies. We love babies. So we started this campaign for Fight for Preemies in 2009. And I started it, and they're like, you know what? Wow, maybe I can get 100 bloggers. This was my goal. That would rock. So we started out on this Bloggers Unite platform, trying to figure it out. We ended up with 504. 504 bloggers blogging on one day. November 17th is World Prematurity Day. And the reach was phenomenal. Like, our reach was 3.3 million readers. I mean, it was unbelievable, the most unbelievable thing ever. So we went from a super high, and we had a relationship with Blog Catalog, so it was with them. Bloggers Unite was one of their components. So shout out to Blog Catalog. And they really helped us, so we worked with them. And then the next year, we were like on our own, because we were not one of their charities of choice. And we still were in the 300 range. So we're still talking millions of readers. So this has been a terrific program. And these are mostly, not exclusively, these are mostly bloggers that have been affected by the mission, whatever that means. So just as an aside, how many people know someone who was born too soon? See? It's like 80% of the population. 500,000 babies are born too soon every year. 500,000 babies, half a million. So we all know someone. It could be your mom, your sister, your neighbor, your somebody at church, I mean, whatever. So this is a big deal for us to be able to promote awareness. What does that look like? Get the word out. We took it global. Originally, the Fight for Preemies was a local, domestic, and then we went global last year. So that was really awesome. Okay, so here are some of the gist. If you're doing a blogging campaign, you're thinking about what does that look like for your organization. these are some of the key components that we have come up with. So, again, something we've been talking about all along, building relationships. Have a year-long blogging engagement. So you can't just be one day. I'm not going to make the ask, and then I'm going to ignore Christine for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So it's about developing that relationship over time. Integrate your campaign across all of your platforms, everywhere. And then I just want to do a nod, because we're not really talking about fundraising, but I do want to do a nod toward fundraising. We discovered this in the first year because, again, we're looking at, you know, all your Radiance 6 and on all of your what's out there through Google or whomever you're using. And I noticed that all of these folks on Etsy, you know what Etsy is, right? Okay. So all of these folks on Etsy were making little things, whatever they make on Etsy. So it's like a crafting, homemade site. And they were giving it a portion of the proceeds to the March of Dimes. 10% of the proceeds go to the March of Dimes. So I started discovering these folks, and I'm like, how can we engage that? Well, now on Pinterest, you just pin them, which is beautiful. So this is sort of a long tail that you can see this thing. So it's yet about fundraising, and it's not during the fundraising, our traditional fundraising season, but these things were really working. So just think about sort of outside the box kinds of ways that could work for you too. So these are just some of the results that I was telling you about. You know, the highest we ever had was 3.3 million readers. And this is globally, multiple languages, which was great. Finding them on Google Alerts was more challenging. I do speak Spanish, so that part was okay. And again, the grassroots fundraising that I was talking about. I'm trying an experiment, which I'm going to share with you, using the bloggers. Okay, so we're on Pinterest. Please, March of Dimes. Pinterest.com/March of Dimes. So I created a board on Pinterest because there was so much energy around Pinterest. And I'm like, okay, so what can we do with that? How can we harness that? So I've created a couple of boards. One of them is on prematurity, and you got a pregnancy one, and a March of Dimes history one because, hello, 75th anniversary next year. But I created one for March for Babies. March for Babies is a walk. It's the biggest fundraising event that we do every year. It's generally the last Sunday in April. So I started a board to see what's going on. What's happening out there with the bloggers? What's happening with the Etsy people? What's happening? How are the participants? They're creating video. So they're creating all of this way for them to reach out into their communities. They're doing outreach. How can we garner that into one place? So I went and started looking. I'm just searching. March for Babies. March for Babies. So I'm looking at other, so I'm repinning other pins, but I'm going to YouTube, searching for my event, then actually pinning their video on this one place. I'm looking at blog posts. Now, unfortunately, some of the blog posts don't have pictures. And if you try to pin something without a picture, you get an error code, pops up and said, I can't find an image. I'm tempted to send them a note and say, you know, you need to put an image on your site. I haven't done that yet, but I'm seriously thinking about, wow, this is great. Can you put a picture of something? I want you to think about this. Think a little bit outside the box. Now, I don't know what's happening. This has only been up, you know, a couple of weeks. But already in a couple of weeks, there's like 300 people that are members of this board. Now, how many people are actually on Pinterest? Okay, a lot of you. So you know you can create a community board. So you can have boards that are just my board. And then the CHD board that Christine was talking about, that's a community board. So you can invite other people to be on your board. So I have a team youth board. I've invited youth. Invite the kids to be on the board. So I don't know what we're going to do about the monitoring situation. Do we monitor it? Do we not monitor it? What if something bad happens? If something bad happens and somebody pins something that you don't really want on your board, or right this minute, you can't take it down because you've pinned it. I can't take it down. I can take the whole board down, but I can't remove that pin. So that's something they need. If anybody from Pinterest is in here, could you fix that problem? So I think that we need to just think outside the box. So that's sort of... Let me just, and then I just wanted, if you want to follow us, please do. Here's all of our Twitter. And I want to open it up to questions. So do you, we got a lot of questions. Okay. Are you going to manage the questions? Perfect.
Sorry?
Are we taking them?
Yeah, we can take questions, but I'd like you to read the questions.
Oh, you want me to read them? All right, I have to stand again. I'll take this one.
Slide it.
Oh, it slides.
There you go.
All right. I was not part of the AV team, obviously.
There's one. Oh. Hi. Okay. Hi, this has been very helpful. Thank you so much. I volunteer on behalf of a pro-life organization. And in our city in Dallas, 60,000 babies are aborted every year. And so it has a touching story, but it's also something that's been so associated with politics. And we advocate, we don't legislate. But still, we have a really hard time just getting people to see that these are, you know, like, this is a human issue. Like, people are killing babies. And it's hard to, like, get any type of support for that from people who are just concerned, like, well, I don't know if I want to take a stand publicly because I might, you know, I might be, you know, preventing a brand from wanting to place advertising on my site, or who knows. But is there any suggestions that you could offer for that in working with bloggers?
There's a network of Christian bloggers that you could start through that, and there's actually a Christian women's blogging conference. I haven't attended it, but I think it's called Relevant Conference.
I think they renamed it.
I don't remember what they renamed it. But if you Google the original, you know, if you Google for it, I'm sure you'll find whatever they renamed it. So, and I would start with people that you think would be friendly to your beliefs, and I would also consider the hyper-local, or there's local blogs too. For example, I live in Philadelphia. We have about 250 bloggers that we get together, and if I am approached by a Philadelphia charity, I go to that group. Like, I don't try to do national stuff unless it's like a national charity. So it's definitely, you know, the people in your local area. And remember, a lot of bloggers have reached offline. So, you know, I have an online forum, but I also was like on the school board, and, you know, I'm involved in a lot of different charities in my hometown. So if somebody wants to do something in Philadelphia, you know, I know a lot of people beyond just the people who read my blog. So local stuff helps.
All right, let's keep going because we have a lot of questions. I want to make sure we get as many as possible.
Hi, really quick. You mentioned sending out an RFP for bloggers. I'm familiar with sending out RFPs for agencies, but I'm not sure what the process is.
Oh, no, it was an RFP that Share Our Strengths sent out to find somebody to handle their blogger outreach.
Oh, okay.
So it's, you send a pitch to bloggers, but they needed to find somebody to step in because the blogger who had been doing it for free said, like, too much. You know, you need to bring in some help, and I'll still be the face of the food blogger bake sale.
Okay, so you use an agency for that?
I have, they hired me, and I have an agency, okay. And also a lot of agencies hire me to do stuff for them, too.
Okay, good to know. Thanks.
Wait, we're gonna move up to the front for a minute, so go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Stan. We're an agency, and we're in Charlotte, North Carolina. We do a decent job of trying to counsel our clients that it's not products versus a cause, that you can do products and a cause at the same time. So we're decently good at that. Our question for you guys is, what we have not mastered is the pay-to-play. So there's a lot of editorial purists out there that still won't take money. So what we're seeing is bloggers divided into two categories, those that will take money and those that won't. What is your advice for navigating that landscape, figuring out how money is not a dirty word, in order to get the brand some exposure, but also push a cause?
I have an example. So one of the brands that I work with is Mam Baby. They sell pacifiers, bottles, etc. And they're working on a blogger ambassador program. And, you know, they don't believe in paying for editorial coverage. I don't believe in it either. But Catherine will be one of the ambassadors. She's not going to be writing a post about pacifiers. She'll be writing about maternal health and other related issues. And then, you know, she could note that she was, you know, sponsored by Mam for that. So it's you're not buying the editorial coverage. You're buying kind of a positive brand relationship.
Well, and the other thing to know is that you just have the conversation because, you know, Debbie reached out to me and said, because I'm very, like, I'm really careful about who I align with. I protect my brand very carefully. But I use Mam pacifiers when I was, I mean, like, I have no issues with the company. I mean, you know, we had those products in our house. And if they're willing to work with me on what the messages are, so because I'm not going to be, like, outright saying, hey, everybody, all my readers who I've worked for years to generate a level of very serious credibility and trust, like, use Mam pacifiers. That's not going to happen. So it's a matter of, depending upon who your client is and what product they're trying to sell, just you know, reaching out and saying, how can we be flexible about this? How would it work for all the parties involved? And yes, there are going to some people will write about anything if you give them a free whatever.
But then, do you really want that post? But,
I mean, no, you don't. And what's interesting to see for me with an agency situation is that the agencies are sort of the cream of agencies is rising to the top. The ones that really realize this is about strategy, this is about partnering with people with real engagement and thinking through long-term relationships like what you talked about. And then there are the agencies that just want the numbers and will give a free whatever to whatever. You know, fine, go for it. But in the end, as a previous brand marketer for 7 years at Coca-Cola, like, I just don't see what you're getting out of that.
And with our blogger ambassador program that I told you about with Baby's First Test, I might have made it seem like we were paying for post. And I think that you need to get away from the mindset of pay per post and not market it like that. You're paying for the relationship. And I think if you approach bloggers with that, we're not paying for content. And then when you ask for the content, to let the blogger write whatever they're going to write, which is kind of scary, but just to have a level of trust because you've built that relationship so you can trust them.
Back on that question, from the vantage point of the consumer for a paid brand blog, do you sacrifice credibility with the end consumer as a brand paying for blogger outreach?
So, in other words, if you were to pay me to write about something, are you sacrificing your credibility?
Yeah, are the consumers going to view differently a product endorsement that was paid?
It depends on who the blogger is. They're not going to view it differently with me because
you've established.
I've been doing this, yeah. If it's somebody that's doing this kind of stuff all the time, then yes, you do lose credit because nobody pays attention anymore. It's like wallpaper.
I mean, there's literally sites out there where every post is a paid post, and an endorsement on that site doesn't really mean much because I kind of think that people, I guess those sites, even if they have stats, have a high bounce rate. I mean, that's just my thought.
Yeah.
I'm a marketer for a major retailer, and part of the way we want to try and spend our marketing dollars is on cause-related marketing. So,
kudos to you.
Good for you.
Good.
Yay.
I haven't gotten approved.
She was
yet,
saying that she's works with a retailer and they want their focus. They're really starting to think now about spending marketing dollars on cause marketing, in case you didn't hear that.
So my question to you all would be is, I mean, I think most of our customers are going to be a little bit younger and may not be involved with so many causes. So, you know, definitely bloggers in your constituency would be perfect. So if we wanted to do something like, you know, we're going to give away $10,000 to a program that's empowering women, how would we approach bloggers like you all to help us get the word out? You know, go to our site, recommend, or, I mean, nominate your woman of choice, and then we'll vote on her, and the winner will get, you know, $10,000. I mean, would we just send out a press release type of thing to you guys, or still the relationship?
I can speak from my experience and definitely building a relationship. Like, make me like you. If I like you, if you approach me even via email, but if you follow me on Twitter, you get interested in my stuff. It's kind of time consuming. I get that. But if you like my daughter's page and you write on there that she's cute, you read the story, and I can tell that you know who I am, and then you follow up with that via email, I'm more likely to listen to you and to get involved. And of course, ultimately, the person has to believe in the cause and the product. So you want to target people who you think, you know, might.
And sometimes finding, like, one blogger that really likes it, they are kind of, when their friends all see that they're willing to do it, it can help. So there's been times when, you know, I'll find one blogger, I'll get a link to their post, and then I'll include that in my pitch. I'll say, you know, here's an example of how so-and-so covered this. So they can see, like, okay, I can cover this in a non-cheesy way that seems authentic. And especially if the person that you're including there is kind of the sample of, like, how another blogger did it, is somebody really respected, then they get a sense, oh, you know, this can be done really well. And I've had bloggers cover products that I've worked with that have a cause component that would have never covered the product without the cause component because, you know, it just wouldn't have been a fit for them. But the cause was a fit for them. So you can sometimes get some more stuff in.
Just one little quick add, because I think this is important. Bloggers travel in packs, okay? We travel in packs. We're tribes. We all know each other. And so we pay attention to things. And if you do something that bloggers don't like, it can be bad. as I'm sure you've seen when you've seen any marketing or, you know, blogging fail, and then everybody jumps on the bandwagon. So the other thing to pay attention to is sites like SheePosts would be one. I have some friends that run SheePosts, and they write about blogging in the sort of women's blogosphere, and they write about the marketing fails, the people who reached out and did something that was completely ridiculous and blew it. And so go read those stories, too, so that you can avoid those mistakes, which is really important.
Hi, I'm 6 months out from a book release and wondering if you have any strategies that really worked for both endorsements but then also launching the book in a way that's full of integrity and really builds a relationship with the blogging community.
Are you blogging about your book already?
I am, and okay. Using Twitter, yeah, as well.
I think that's definitely the first step, and I'll let. I've never released a book, so.
Depending on the type of book, I mean, there's, for example, like there's a group called From Left to Right, and they review books, and it's a blogging, you know, it's like a list of maybe about 25 bloggers that will just review books.
And I've endorsed. I actually have endorsed. You know, I do the blurb on the back. And that's a matter of like having a relationship. It's usually the people that I know. You know. And I really like the book, obviously, or I wouldn't. So it's like relationship. You're probably like, everybody stop saying the R word. But doing that and getting to know the people, then they're going to be more willing to do whatever they need to do to help you.
Like, is your book on NetGalley so people could download the copy to their Kindle?
Yes.
Okay, see, I mean, that helps a lot, too, because then you can, you know, you can actually do some research on NetGalley to figure out who to send an offer to. I get a lot of those, and then I can download them. And it doesn't cost you money as opposed to mailing out samples of your book, which if you're a smaller publishing house is hard.
We just got the notice that it's time. So if you have other questions, come on up.
Yeah, we have cards. We have contact information.
Come on up.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming so early on the last day.